One correction, that episode was not Law and Order. The one in which the man was crushed by the train was Homicide: Life on the Street. So that was a few years yet earlier, but it was still an incredible episode. I wonder how many of you remember that. This is Ghost to Ghost AM. Now, listen, everybody, unscreen calls. We're not screening the calls at all, so it's up to you. They've got to be good stories. The show will only be as good as your stories. One story per customer. Please try to use anything but a cell phone. And I still have yet to touch a few cell phones, so please, if you can, get to a corded phone. Only the scariest stories need apply. We'll be right back. The following is from Bill in Rockford, Illinois. There's a house here in north central Illinois known to the locals simply as the Penfield Place. The house's eerie legacy began back around the turn of the century when a kitchen fire took the lives of two small children and a servant. Next, an undertaker took up residence, whose wife fell headlong down the main staircase there, breaking her back and her neck, killing her instantly. The funeral director's body was discovered a few months later in his own backyard, swaying from the branches of a maple tree where he had hanged himself in despair. Then the real tragedy commenced. A newlywed couple by the name of Penfield bought the place, moved in, and one night, not long after, the young bride, Mara Penfield, went missing. The jealous husband was always suspected in her disappearance, but nothing ever came of it, not until a decade later in the 1940s, when 17-year-old Mara Penfield was finally found again. Her sad remains were unearthed by some workmen in the backyard of her former home, buried beneath that infamous maple. She'd been stabbed, rolled up inside an oriental carpet, appendages dismembered and removed to only God and the killer knows where. Her missing limbs were never found. After that, the house went really bad. Future tenants would experience a frightening presence there, one which loomed over them as they slept and circled the bed, sometimes even touching their extremities inquisitively. A soft voice could be heard whispering, "Am I dead? Am I dead?" And once an abomination was witnessed by a group of New Year's Eve revelers, a hideous shape crawling across the second floor stair landing in the darkness as if searching blind for something. When somebody let out a scream, the form raised up suddenly and glided away, nightmarish and black with no face to speak of. The large dwelling eventually fell victim to neglect and was converted into a tenement room and boarding. But I can distinctly remember once in the 1970s when a young expectant mother living there broke out in a high fever one night and miscarried inside that same shuttered house, giving birth afterward to a stillborn boy at a nearby hospital. A stillborn baby boy, extremely misshapen and underdeveloped. No legs, no arms. The rambling old Penfield Place still stands today, decaying and in ruins, a monument to all our very worst fears as human beings. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello? Yes, hello. Turn your radio off, please.
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Art?
It is.
Hi, Art. This is Judy from Huntsville, Alabama.
Hi, Judy.
I just wanted to tell you a story about a doll.
A doll?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. My mother and dad bought me a doll. The last one they ever bought me was the size of a 3-year-old child. One night, many years later, I had the doll and standing up in the corner of the bedroom. I was reading a book, and all of a sudden, out of my peripheral vision, I saw something move.
Yes.
And it startled me, of course, and I looked up, and I looked toward the doll, and the doll raised its arm and put it down.
Oh, brother. Now, in this modern day, let me just stop you for a moment. I've seen the ads for them. Today they sell dolls that are, you know, like a 3-year-old size, a 2 or 3-year-old size, and infant size.
Right.
And they do move, and they do say things. They even memorize the name you give them.
Right, but this was I'm 58 years old,
I hear you. So there was no name memorized or there was no, movement. This was just a doll.
Just a plain doll, the size of a three-year-old child.
And you saw her raise her arm.
She raised it up. She put it down. It, of course, terrified me.
Yes.
You know, I broke out in a cold sweat. And the only thing I knew to do was to go and pick the thing up and take it and put it in the den. And I did that. Well, the next day, I told my family about it. And, you know, of course, some believed me, some didn't. My mother said, well, I don't want you to do away with the doll because that's the last one we bought you. You know, it's sort of sentimental.
Sure.
She took it over to her apartment. She said, I'll keep it. Okay.
Yes.
Things started happening at her apartment. She woke up one night out of a deep sleep, and she said standing beside her bed was a dark figure. And the only way she could describe this, it was during Star Wars, was it looked like Darth Vader. But, you know, to me, it was like a demon.
Oh, my God. You know, not the doll, though.
No, it wasn't the doll. It was a dark figure standing beside her bed.
Do you think the doll brought this to her?
I think it did. And also, she had a plant on a plant stand. And I've seen this in other stories before about possession and different things like this. The plant was shaped by itself.
Oh, boy.
And my mother was a very smart woman. You know, she wasn't given to delusions or anything like that. And she started telling me all this stuff. And I said, well, I think we need to get rid of this doll. I don't know what's wrong with it, but I think I'm going to try to get in touch with Ed and Lorraine Warren and try to, you know, see if there's something wrong with this doll.
So did you get rid of it?
Well, I got married. My husband put the doll out at the trash, and they picked it up. So I have no idea where the doll is now, but I hope no little child has the doll.
It's probably out just walking around the trash yard somewhere.
I don't know, but this is the truth. I mean, I'm a nurse. I'm not a person given to delusions or hallucinating or anything like that. But
trust me, I believe you.
I don't like dolls.
That's why we do these programs. Thank you very much. We do them because these things really do happen. I've had, and I won't go into details, but I've had a few cursed things like dolls sent to me. And some pretty strange stuff happened. People come into the possession of something like what she was just talking about, that doll, and they don't know what to do with it. And so they end up, in the old days, when I was doing a 5-day, 6-day a week show, they'd send them to me, and they would tell me this, whatever it is, I won't go into what it was, is cursed. Well, mistakenly, I did keep something for a few days, and what a mistake that was. Good morning, West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling about a man under a table in
Okay,
Bishop,
turn your radio off for me, sir. That's number one.
Yeah, I'm calling about a ghost in Bishop, California under a bed, under a table.
Under a table or a bed?
A table. I was sleeping in my uncle's sister's house in Bishop, California. We were on vacation, and I was sleeping in the living room facing the kitchen. And when I woke up at 3 in the morning, I heard voices calling me from the kitchen. I woke up, and everyone was asleep around the living room, and I could see the kitchen. I looked in the kitchen. I got up. I could see somebody under the table calling me with his hand. I could see his dark figure calling me.
Actually, audibly calling you or sort of beckoning you to come?
A guy under the table calling me, like, come here, like, come to the dark side. I'm like, fuck that. I mean.
Okay, well, all right. Unfortunately, you just used some language that I can't have on the air, so I had to eliminate that. That's what happened there, folks. I understand that people get very emotional when they're telling a story, but there are certain words, the deadly seven, I think they are, that have been articulated that you cannot use on the air, and so we have a special little thing to eliminate that, and that's what just happened. He got to a part in the story where he indicated emotionally with a word we couldn't use that he was not about to follow the suggestion of that ghost. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello? Wildcard.
From Los Angeles?
Yes, Los Angeles.
Hi, how are you? Happy Halloween.
I'm just fine.
Okay, this is my story.
Okay, turn your radio off first, dear.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's going to be very confusing for you otherwise, because we're putting you directly on the air. So.
Okay, it's awesome.
All right, all right. And what is your first name?
Rebecca.
Rebecca, go right ahead.
Hi, okay. This happened many, many years ago, and hate to say it, but a friend of mine and I were using a Ouija board, and I've since learned not to use Ouija boards, but this was before I knew better.
Yes.
And we were talking to, you know, various spirits, and we eventually got an evil spirit that came on. So we decided, okay, let's get rid of the evil spirit, and that was enough for the night. And it kind of freaked us out a little bit. And the evil spirit was basically saying how she wanted to kill my friend and she was going to get my friend and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So before I left my friend's apartment where we were doing the Ouija board, I told her, well, you know, I don't know much about this stuff, but I'll try and help you however way I can to, you know, prevent you from being killed. So I left her apartment to go home, and it was around 2 in the morning at that time. And I'd taken maybe about 10 steps out of her apartment, and, you know, it was pitch black. No one was up, completely quiet. And all of a sudden, I heard something. It was like someone stood right next to me and screamed in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
And what it said was, don't help her, you jerk. Don't help her, you jerk. So, of course, that totally freaked me out. So I ran back to my friend's apartment, and I'm like, help, let me in.
Sure.
So she calmed me down a little bit, and we kind of talked about it. And what she said was is that she was going to send her guardian angel home with me to kind of protect me, because now we thought this thing might be after me. So I kind of poo-pooed it. I was like, yeah, right, her guardian angel. But, you know, I figured, you know, why not? Because I didn't really know too much about it and didn't know if I believed or not. But it was getting late, so I eventually go back up to my car, and I'm starting to drive home, and I'm driving along on the freeway. And then all of a sudden, as I'm driving along, bam, right in the passenger seat of my car, this man appeared.
Wow.
Like fully formed, completely solid, you know, not like ghostly, wearing jeans and a shirt. And he basically turned towards me, smiled, waved, and then disappeared. And I was like, wow, the guardian angel really did follow me home.
Well, maybe. I mean, these are reasons why you don't screw around with Ouija boards.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you open doors that you didn't expect to open and that you cannot close.
Well, I realize that now.
And so I take it now if somebody presented you with a Ouija board and said, let's have some fun, you'd go the other way.
Yeah, exactly. Because I did use the Ouija board a few times after that, but every time I did, I noticed my life would get bad. You know, bad stuff would start happening, and I finally connected it. So I got rid of my Ouija board. And
so you're not a real fast learner.
Well, it's been like 10 years since I've used one, so it's been quite a while.
All right. Thank you. It's pretty widely known that years ago I did use a Ouija board. I won't tell the story. It scared me so badly. What occurred scared me so badly. Maybe one day I'll tell the story. Don't use a Ouija board. Don't screw around with a Ouija board. That really is a lesson that you ought not have to learn the hard way. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. In 1958, I was 10 years old. It was a family tradition that we would meet at my grandmother's house on Easter Sunday. My mother had gone up on Friday, and my father was an Atlanta City policeman, a big man, never saw him afraid of anything in his life.
Mm-hmm.
He picked me up, and we headed for a small town in Tennessee. On the way up, all my life, and my brothers and sisters, we'd passed this house that had an iron gate, and we called it the Haunted House. My dad's, I stopped. I said, Dad, can we stop and look? And we didn't have anything to do, and he wasn't too eager to get to my grandparents' house too early. So we got out and went in. Dad walked up on the front porch, and I started up a flight of stairs inside. And, you know, like a kid with a little bravado, I ran right to the top of the steps. As soon as I got to the top of the steps, there was about a three-year-old girl standing looking at me. A little blonde-haired girl, nothing extraordinary about her. And I said, Dad, there's a girl up here. My dad thought maybe some squatters were in the house. And he ran up the steps behind me. And as soon as the little girl saw my dad, she just went straight across the hall into a bedroom and slammed the door. My dad walked up to the bedroom door. My dad was a big man. He was not afraid of anything. He pushed the door. The door pushed him back so hard he almost fell down. That made my dad mad. He got up and gave the door the boot. The door flew off the hinges, and we went in the room. It was about an 11 by 11 bedroom, two windows going outside, and my dad went over to them and couldn't open either one. There was a closet in the room. My dad opened the closet, and the closet was just four walls, wood panel solid. My dad knocked on everything in the room. He knocked all over the floor, and we found nothing. So my dad and I went back outside, and my mother was related to the sheriff in a small town right where we were. And my dad went down there. He thought that people were squatting there, and it also alarmed him that the little girl might be in some kind of trouble.
Sure.
My dad told the officer there what had just taken place, and the officer went into the chief's office, and the chief was related to my mother. And the chief came out and called my dad and I into another office. And he opened a file cabinet, and he pulled out a file, and the file was a newspaper article. That house had belonged to a doctor that the copper company had brought in there to treat their miners. The doctor was in Atlanta. The doctor's wife evidently had a boyfriend. And the doctor came back to his home. His maid told him that his wife wasn't there, that she was downtown. He went downtown. He shot the lover. He shot the mother. Went back to the house and shot the little girl and shot himself.
Oh, my God. And so that little girl, or her spirit, or what was left of her, remains in that house.
The article went on to say that people heard the little girl. He shot the maid also, but the little girl was the last alive, and she went running up the steps screaming, and then a gunshot.
Wow. I really appreciate your story, sir, and your call. I don't know, again, what this tells us about life after death. Many ghost stories are associated with violent deaths. Many ghost stories are associated with suicides. In other words, some sort of very traumatic, unfulfilled, unrequited love. All of these things seem to bring about a continued presence. Now, whether this is a contemporary awareness, or it's just some sort of echo of what was, it's hard to say. Either way, it certainly is freaky. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hello, yes, this is Coast to Coast.
Yes, it is. Ghost to Ghost. Turn your radio off, please.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry about that.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Kevin Palmer. Sorry for the last name. I'm Kevin in Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes.
And I have to say, the first time I listened to Coast AM, I get it through the internet. I was listening to older episodes, and I invoked a demon when I listened to Coast AM.
While you were listening to Coast?
Well, I got into Coast AM after through my pals on my friends on Pal Talk, and they sent me a link for some of the shows, and I invoked a demon when I was listening to Pal Talk. And his name is JC.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. That's not exactly a ghost story, although there's a little bit of terror certainly involved in it. JC. This is Ghost to Ghost AM. We'll be right back. Fascinating. How many stories I get from police officers, ER nurses, and doctors, but they don't ever want to be named, or rarely. I protect them anyway. Matt from Plainfield, Illinois. Says, this is just a fast blast. I used to be a narcotics detective. One night I was called to the scene of a drug-related murder. When I arrived, I saw a man standing over the dead body telling him to get up. Long story short, It was a dead man yelling at his own corpse. We'll be right back. You know, even though what we're doing tonight are ghost stories, this is really all about whether there is some kind of existence after physical death, right? Barbara says, not that scary, but this is the reason I believe our spirits go on after we leave our physical bodies. In 2000, my ex-wife and I were expecting our youngest son. I was in the Navy at the time. We lived in San Diego. I was on a six-week exercise in Hawaii when I got a sudden Red Cross message that I needed to get home. My ex-wife had to have emergency surgery, and there was a very good chance she'd lose the baby at 5 months. I was able to get emergency leave and a plane ticket, made it to the hospital 21 hours later, just before she went in. The surgery went fine, though there were a few touchy moments, and we went home a few days later. Over the next couple of months, my ex began talking in her sleep. The conversations always sounded friendly, though I could never make out quite what was said. She'd never talked in her sleep before and didn't say anything about having strange dreams, so I left it alone. She was put on bed rest, and we were at the doctor's office about twice a week. I was worried and prayed every night for my son to be healthy. My ex went into labor, and it was a problem, and then another problem, and a problem after that. There were issues with the pain medication they'd put her on, problems with monitoring equipment, you name it, it happened. When my son was born, he didn't have a heartbeat, wasn't breathing, and was a light blue color. I think every doctor in the hospital that night was in the room, and I can't say enough good things about them. They placed my son on a cart and ran out of the room. There were people taking care of my ex, trying to make sure she was going to make it, so I went to find my son. I was not familiar with the area, that area of the hospital, and there wasn't anybody around to ask because everybody was trying to either care for my ex or my son. I heard someone call my name on my right side, so assuming it was a doctor, I went towards the sound. Then another voice called my name from down the hall. I'm running down the hall, and the word here filled my head. I really can't describe it. I looked, and there was my son being worked on. I walked into the room. The doctor looked at me. He had this look on his face, and I just know it wasn't good. The nurses just looked at me. I began to cry because I knew my son was dead. Now, this is where it all gets a little strange. I noticed some movement out of the corner of my eye. It was very fast, so I looked in that direction. There wasn't anything there. I walked over to where the little baby was and was going to touch him, my hand an inch over his chest. The doctors were doing whatever they were doing a little away from me. They'd totally given up. Then out of the blue, my son starts slightly moving and lets out this huge, strong cry. Of course, I jumped a little. I lost my balance and began to fall backward. I turned a little, trying to right myself and see the window. Both of my grandmothers were there in the reflection, smiling. And it looked as if they were staring at the table, smiling at my little boy. After that, he did have a few medical problems, a couple of surgeries to fix a few things. Now, a healthy 7-year-old. The only thing about him is, well, that's strange. He talks from time to time about angels that he sees at night. He says that sometimes they're old ladies, sometimes they're mommy's age, but he says they always look kind of the same. I did find a picture of one of my grandmothers a couple of years ago, and he pointed to it right away and said, Granny. So I'm sure they came to help. That's our story. Happy Halloween. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
This is Wayne from Pennsylvania. And my dad, he had 16 brothers and 5 sisters, and he was the 7th son. And one time, I had he bought me a box of Cracker Jacks with a toy in it. And I took it upstairs and put it in my drawer.
I remember those toys, yes.
And so I went down and played outside a little bit. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I decided to go up and get it, and then the door was locked. There was no lock on the door. It was like, you know, I couldn't push it open. So I looked under the door, and I could see these feet look like dog feet. And I was pushing, all of a sudden it opened. I seen it going out the window, and my toy was gone.
And, so something like a dog had taken your toy, not let you in the room?
All I seen was just two dog feet, like. You know, I didn't see the rest of the body.
But they were like dog feet.
Yeah, and my toy was gone. It went out the window quick. And then what really got me, when I was about 14, and my mom and my dad were separated, and all of a sudden, about 2 o'clock in the morning, there was like a big explosion in my head, you know, and I got up, ran out in the kitchen, and my mom, she asked me, what's wrong? What's wrong? I said, something's wrong with Dad, you know, because he worked, you know, distance away. And I said, she said, nah, it can't be. I said, Mom, there's something's going on because I have a feeling something's wrong, you know. And then about an hour later, she got a phone call. He got hit by a truck and trailer.
I'm so sorry. That there are so many, many stories like that. For some reason, people, they seem to know when something awful has happened to a relative. Now, I have no idea how that happens or why that happens, but it does. That communication takes place. A relative somewhere has died, and as that man said, it's like an explosion in your head. You just suddenly know. And you've got to ask yourself, what mechanism transmits that message? It's really as mysterious as other things that we cannot explain. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I have a story about EVPs for you.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Niagara Falls, Canada.
Okay.
And my name is Cindy.
Okay, Cindy.
Hi. My boyfriend, myself, and a friend decided to go ghost hunting, and we brought our digital recorders with us, and we were out in a graveyard down in Niagara-on-the-Lake. I'm not sure if you know where that area is or not.
I do, yes.
Okay, we were down in one of the graveyards down there, and so we were there for about an hour, and we were just about to leave, and my boyfriend goes, well, why don't you try just to ask a couple more questions before we leave?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we asked a couple more questions, and then my friend, for some reason, goes, oh, I wonder if somebody's going to come home with us. And I'm like, that's not even funny. Don't even joke about that, right?
Uh-huh.
So then we get into the car, and I'm like, well, let's listen to what we've got, right, see if we have anything. So we're driving back. We get to the part on the tape, or not, it wasn't in tape because it was digital, but we get to that part where she says that, and clear as day you hear on it, go home. And we don't know who it was. It wasn't like any of us saying it, but as clear as day you could hear somebody say, go home.
Go home. And I assume you kept going home.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we did.
That's because EVPs work. Now, what they are, of course, we don't know, but we know they're real. That's why I continue to have my EVP guests on the air, because they're real. And if you doubt it, get a recorder. If you've got the cojones for it, take it to a graveyard or somewhere else where there might be spirits about. Do a few hours of recording. Come home. And, then send me an email or let me know what was said. Fact of the matter is, EVP works. What it really is, we have no way of knowing. But it's not a joke, and those who take the time and trouble to really go out and try it inevitably get something they cannot explain. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Vince from Wyoming. I got a ghost story for you.
Yes, well, it's got to be extra good since you're on a cell phone.
Okay, well, going across Pennsylvania one time, back in the 70s, the truck got awful cold inside. Look over in the passenger seat, and there's like an entity sitting there.
Oh, well, this is good.
Well,
when you say an entity, describe, if you can, what you saw.
A very, very light shade of white.
Okay.
And that was it.
In the form of a human being, or what?
No, I can't say it was in the form of a human being. It was just something in white was sitting over there in that passenger seat.
And you managed to stay on the road?
Yeah, yeah. It didn't bother me. It
didn't bother you?
Not at all.
Okay, I appreciate the call, but I don't understand that at all. If something manifested itself next to me on a truck or car seat, I would be awfully lucky to stay on the road. In fact, I don't know how I'd stay on the road. No idea at all. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
Hey, I just want to say that I've had several ghost experiences in my life.
Well, we only have time for one, so give us your best.
Okay, let me think about it. Well, I just moved recently to Washington State, and two separate instances of a very similar kind of event. I was laying in bed, and I felt like someone was walking towards me, and I was like, what? I looked up, nothing was there. Laid back down, and then I felt something getting close to me again. I was trying to ignore it, and nobody was in the room except for me, and I felt something like lean on me toward, like kind of my chest, and then something screamed into my right ear, just like screamed. And then a separate incident, which was the same kind of thing, same kind of pressure on me, and I something screamed in my right ear the second time, but it said, save me. It screamed like, save me.
Really? And what did you do?
Oh, strange enough, I wasn't really, really that scared, because I've had some other experiences before, but I tried just to go back to bed. Or, well, the first one, I actually jumped out of bed, and I said, okay, I better get in the shower and wake up. The second one, it was actually right before I went to sleep, and I just was like, okay, I'm going to ignore this, put a cover over my head, and go back to bed. But it was really weird.
Well, the words save me have obvious meaning. So didn't you feel compelled to get up, investigate, and try to help somebody?
Well, I mean, I honestly, when I first, the one when I heard something yell save me, it was like really only in my right ear, and I felt like something, it felt like something leaning on your chest, kind of. Originally, I thought my boyfriend was sleeping right next to me, and I thought, well, maybe his psychic energy. At first, I thought maybe his psychic energy was like telling me something, I don't know, but a tree fell down behind our house maybe around that time, and he said maybe the tree was trying to say save me, I don't know, but I was like, I had to go to sleep, I had to go to work the next day, so I was like, okay, I'm like kind of scared, so I'm just gonna like try to like just go to sleep, but it freaked me out. I mean, the first one happened, I just, like I said, I jumped out of bed, and I thought this, whatever it is, it's trying to tell me to it's like trying to get me out of bed. It's like, don't sleep anymore. It was like saying, you gotta get out of bed and start the day.
Okay, well, if that had happened to me, I'm sure it would have worked. I doubt that I would have slept the rest of the night. Whether or not I would have got, you know, awakened and tried to help somebody, I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Mike from Indianapolis.
Hi, Mike.
And I am just calling. I had a story when I lived in Kentucky in 1993. And it's very interesting, and it involves some pretty famous landmarks there in Kentucky. To begin with, I was a teenager, a senior in high school, and I had missed my bus for school. And seeing as I really had to graduate, and I didn't want to get the, get in trouble from my father, I decided I better get to school as fast as I can.
For me, that was usually a reason to stay home. Missed the bus, Mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
And, you know, it seemed to be around this time, actually, probably beginning of November. And, well, there's a place there called Valley Station, Kentucky. And I was going to school, and I kind of ran a lot when I was younger. And so I was kind of jogging, and I was new to the area at the time. I just moved there. And what happened was is I decided to take a shortcut. And from this experience, it is ill-advised. And I took the shortcut to get to school, you know, on time, a little bit earlier to not get in trouble. So I'm jogging up this hill, and I pass this golf course, and I get to the end of the top of this hill, and it is a place called Waverly Hills Sanatorium. And, of course, everybody's heard of it now. But at the time, you know, I had no idea, you know, of the actual experiences there. But, you know, I was jogging. I had my headphones on, and decided, you know, at the time that place was abandoned in around 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm jogging through this place because the gate is usually, you know, it's left open. And so I'm jogging through, and heading west towards what's known as Dixie Highway, and I get to the, you know, top of the hill, and I pass the actual hospital, and I'm listening to my headphones, and my music's blaring, and I head, you know, past the hospital and get to the behind of it, to the west side of it. To the right of me was a strange shed, and to the left of me was another kind of strange angled down shed-looking thing. I'm not sure to this day. I've never been there other than this time.
Okay, so what happened?
So actually what happened was is I had stopped to take a break. And my, so I'd stopped and I decided to turn off my headphones. And when I did, there was these strange sounds of voices. And it seemed like hundreds of them all around me, you know, at the time. But I had no idea that this place was supposedly haunted. And I'm, not very easily scared. So I had, I turned around and said, shut up. And right at that instance, there was no more voices. And all the voices had shut up, all at once. And I said, it's kind of odd. And I looked to my right of me at this shed. And in the window is this black shadow-like figure that many people see with the red eyes. And it just seemed to look at me with an eerie look, and I got scared. And I started running down the other side of the hill to the back side of the hospital as fast as I could. And I was running and running and had a feeling, like just things were around me. And I got to the bottom of the hill toward these railroad tracks. And what seemed to appear out of nowhere was a man and his dog. And this dog came running up to me, and it was a Rottweiler, a large Rottweiler. And I was getting scared, and I told the man, hey, does your dog bite? And the man never answered. It was a man in a trench coat, a large man with a long beard. And I repeatedly said, hey, does your dog bite? Does your dog bite? And he says, he never says anything until the dog comes up to me and just seems to barely nudge my pant leg and looks over at the man. And then the man, says something. He says, who are you? And I say my name, Mike, and I just got here from Chicago. I thought actually that I was walking through a marijuana field and a guy was getting mad. Huh. So the, it happens a lot, in Kentucky. And so I'm thinking, I better keep it cool. He's going to get this dog on me or, And so I say, hey, I'm just late for school, passing on through.
Okay, Mike, we've got to get to the end of it here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So I say, okay, I'm sorry. And, the guy, I say, I'm late for school, bye. And the guy says, okay, leave and don't look back. And so I run off and I'm walking down the railroad tracks towards the Doss High School over there. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to look back, and what man is not going to look back?
Right.
And as I look back, the man and his dog is gone. But in that field where I was standing was about 100, over 100 apparitions, gray-looking figures.
What had been all those voices?
Yeah. And they had, and were just looking at me. And I ran and ran to school, and for a long time, nobody believed me until recently I had found out that place was so famous. And I just wanted to let that story out, and I just wanted to let people know
that it really is true. Mike, what do you think happens to you after you die?
I'm really not sure, but I think that there probably is a heaven and hell because, I don't see why a book like the Bible would survive for so many years.
It's a good point, but if there really is a heaven and hell, then where had these people come from, Mike?
Well, maybe they had just like the stories go, maybe the stories are right and they are, excuse my French, damned or cursed.
And just around. Thank you very much for the call, Mike. So in this case, hundreds of spirits, first in voice and then almost in flesh.